Thank you, Joya. And thanks for the opportunity to share our experience in this field test. Just a reminder, I will be talking about the State Public Health System Assessment Field Test. I always like to throw in a slide that shows people where Nebraska is. I remember back to my graduate school days when a student asked, I know where Iowa is, where is Nebraska in relation to that? So we are right next door to Iowa, if that helps you out. Also Colorado, Kansas, South Dakota, and Wyoming. Our population is just over 1.8 million people, and most of our population is on the eastern part of the state. So when we think about public health in Nebraska, we have to think about the very rural, and Lana and I were talking about the frontier areas of our states, as well as the more urban parts. We have to keep that spectrum in mind. I wanted to provide you sort of the big picture view of why we decided to field test version 3 of the State Public Health System Assessment. We have a grant through the National Public Health Improvement Initiative from the CDC, and part of that effort is to create a performance management system. We are also helping to support our local health departments create performance management systems through our office. We also are preparing for potential public health accreditation and completing the prerequisites, including the state health assessment, the state health improvement plan, the SHA and the SHIP, and an agency strategic plan. So we decided to use MAP, or Mobilizing for Action Through Planning and Partnerships, to do our state health assessment. Most of our local health departments have used MAP, so we thought it would be a nice fit for us to use MAP to complement the work the locals are doing. And finally, to round out that big picture, we're using the results to inform our SHIP and our strategic plan. All flows together. So this busy slide shows our concept of performance management system. And this is based on the Turning Point model for performance management, if some of you are familiar with that, which shows step one, setting performance standards, then performance measurement, monitoring and reporting progress, and then that idea of continuous quality improvement. So we're back up here in step one, setting those performance standards. And we've included assessment as an important piece of that, state health improvement plan, and then an agency strategic plan. And we believe that each plan should establish performance standards for health status, obesity, cancer, whatever comes up, and health system priorities. So we wanted to make sure that those two were represented. And we found that the State Public Health System Assessment is really one of the best ways, and the only ways that we found, to help identify what are those problems with the health system. So it became very important to our process. That's enough of that busy slide. Here's an overview of the MAP process, in case you're not familiar with it. So in the center there, there's a bit of organization, partnership development, a visioning process, and then the four MAP assessments, which are around the outside of the graphic. Community themes and strengths, local or state public health system assessment, community health status, and then forces of change, which of course then lead into identification of strategic issues, formulation of goals and strategies, and the action cycle. So once again, most of our local health departments have used this process. It's the one that worked, that we knew the best and we thought would work the best for us. So we have a little bit of experience with the previous versions. We completed version 1 in 2005 in a one-day retreat-style implementation. We found that there were lots of voting opportunities. I don't know how many of you used version 1, and less time for discussion. That was sort of our what we discovered after using it. We used the results in the preparation of our second state health improvement plan. And a lot of the participants, when we asked them to come back to try version 3, they said, are we going to be doing this? I don't know if it's the voting cards. And we said, no, not as much. Give it a shot. And we did find that to be true. There was less of this. Our local health departments, now we didn't do version 2 at the state, but our local health departments did In 2007, they were redoing their health assessments. And then 2011 to the present, so they use version 2. And we help them help facilitate those assessments locally for them. Not for them, with them. They asked us to help facilitate. So we do have some experience with version 2. We found that to get it done in a reasonable amount of time, we really just voted. There was more time for discussion in version 2, we thought, but we still had to get to the voting. So the Division of Public Health led this assessment, and for our field tests, we completed a one-day retreat-style implementation of the assessment. We had an orientation session. We split into small groups of 8 to 15 people to work through the assessment. And we did 5 essential services in the morning and 5 in the afternoon and 2.5 hours per session. I sent 100 invitations and we had 80 participants. We individualized the invitations for specific essential services, tried to match the participants with the essential services so they would have the content or expertise to answer the questions. And we sent them because we do a lot of work with partners across the state, and we thought if they received an invitation from us that they might be more likely to come. And I think they came, part of the reason they came was because we sent the invitations. So I think that helped, thinking about who should send it. So we did spend a lot of time thinking about who should come to the assessment. What we did was review the assessment tool by essential service. We determined who in our state could answer those questions and made a list by essential service, like you can see in this table. So for essential service number 8, assure a competent public and personal healthcare workforce, we thought the Public Health Association should be there, the University of Nebraska Medical Center, College of Public Health, etc. And then we brainstormed names for each of those. We asked a few people to review our lists to make sure they were comprehensive. They had some ideas for who else should be there. And we also tried to get people to come to both our morning and afternoon sessions. So if we identified somebody, we did essential services 1 through 5 in the morning. If we found somebody in that morning group, we tried to put them in the afternoon group there so we could utilize their expertise all day long. We also, next step then, was to select and train the facilitators. We selected facilitators from our division with good facilitation skills and who knew the essential service well or could at least adapt to the content. Each facilitator was assigned 2 essential services, 1 in the morning, 1 in the afternoon, and we provided a 1.5-hour training. We provided assessment sections for each facilitator, an overview of version 3. Some of them had been to the version 1 session, and we wanted to make sure they knew this was different. We reviewed essential elements of the facilitation for how we wanted it to be done. We reviewed materials and then walked through a sample assessment. We selected and trained recorders. We selected recorders from our division and created a recorder guidebook and note-taking template. We did not provide an in-person training for the recorders, which will become a lesson learned later. Final preparations, we made sure we had RSVPs so we could set up the rooms according to the numbers. Meeting room setup we thought about, we wanted it to be sort of circular so people could speak to each other and have conversation. Compiled the equipment and materials, there was a lot of stuff that we needed. Sent an email reminder 1 week, I sent it. 1 week prior to the assessment, it was individualized. Sent a reminder to the facilitators and recorders and prepared the orientation presentation. Seems pretty easy, right? We finally got to the assessment day just over a year ago. This is the facilitator's agenda. So we got there a half hour before everyone arrived so that facilitators and recorders could set up their meeting rooms and talk to each other about expectations for the day. We spent a half hour on the welcome and the background information, and then we broke into small groups to complete the assessment. We did essential services 1 through 5 in the morning, had lunch, provided lunch, as sort of an incentive for them to be there. And then after lunch, essential services 6 through 10. Then we built some time into the agenda for recorders and facilitators to clean up their rooms and debrief with them, thinking about things that we could do differently next time, or any other important information that we needed to record. Here's the good stuff. What worked for us? Providing a handout of the assessment for all participants so they could see the questions worked for us, or you could project it somehow via PowerPoint. Having a facilitator training guide, list of participants and materials worked, and the facilitators really liked that list of participants because Nebraska is a small state. They knew most of the people who would be in their sessions, and they knew which people might be difficult participants. So that helped them prepare for their facilitation. Arriving a half hour prior to the event to set things up and have the facilitators and recorders talk to each other worked. When we got into the sessions, the assessments, showing the tally or spread of initial votes to participants worked so that as we were trying to reach consensus, if there was an outlier, they could say, you know, I can live with what the majority has said, or we know exactly where to have the conversation to try to reach consensus. 2.5 hours per essential service discussion was okay. We thought that if it would have gone longer, it might have been too long. People started to repeat themselves during the assessment times, so we were unsure, but it was okay. It worked okay for us. Setting a time limit for the discussion on what each participant is doing to fulfill the essential service kind of at the beginning of the assessment worked better than doing a once around. That took too long. Recorders having a copy of the assessment tool and the handout that lists strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and priorities worked for them. I'll show the handout next here. That was exactly the way we wanted to capture the information into those categories, so that worked best. Individual invitations and reminders worked to get people there. And we thought version 3 worked for us. It allowed time for discussion of how our state system meets or does not meet the standards, brought people together to network, and we discovered that people don't really take the time to have these conversations about how the public health system is working, and this provides that opportunity. People at the end of the day, you know, they've been there all day. They came up to me and said, "This was great, Colleen. We need to do this more often." And in the back of my head, I was thinking, if you organize it, we can do it more often. But the message that I took away was people want these opportunities to talk about how the system works. And they really felt like that we were going to move forward from there and make some changes. So here's the worksheet that we used. Now, this is part of the tool, but I believe you're supposed to use it, have a conversation at the end of each essential service to capture these ideas. We used it at the beginning to help people gather their thoughts. We had them jot down on their own into each of those categories, ideas. And then at the end of the session, we took that documentation with us. So it helped us capture what people were thinking, but it also gave them some time to think about the essential service before we got into it. And this is the worksheet that the recorders preferred to take notes on. What didn't work? The discussion questions sometimes distracted the participants. They'd get hung up on wording or they'd get too detailed on something. And I think that is something that we could have fixed through facilitation, through training our facilitators better and having them look through the questions a little bit more ahead of time. Having a once-around discussion, I mentioned this before, took way too long. We learned that in the morning session and corrected in the afternoon. The spreadsheet that I created for people to take notes on was a dud. It did not work. They really liked that other worksheet. I didn't provide an in-person training for the recorders, and they did not feel prepared at all. So we would have had facilitators and recorders do a training together. would have given them opportunity to connect, to talk about expectations, and would have helped them feel more prepared for the actual assessment day. So that was a big lesson learned. Also, with the recorders, we chose people who were not as familiar with the content of the essential service. For example, we had a couple of administrative assistants in a couple of places, and they're smart people. They just don't know the content, and so they had trouble recording the key information that we needed from those sessions. So I would get professional staff to take notes, because they can record the actual content that you need so you can move forward later. There's a priority questionnaire. That's part of the tool. And we tried to do it in small groups, but it didn't work for us. Keep that in mind for later. It was hard to get done in 2.5 hours, but we didn't think it should have gone longer. So timing is hard to gauge. One other thing that I didn't put on here was that our division, our state health agency leadership, was defensive in some of the small group discussions. Even though I said it so many times that this is an assessment of our public health system, they thought it was about our own agency. And so whenever things would come up about what our division was or was not doing or how well we were doing it, they sometimes got a little bit defensive. So that's important to keep in mind when you're creating your invitation lists or while you're prepping your facilitators, or even just thinking about group dynamics in general. When you get that big list of participants done, just take a look through and see where there may or may not be dynamics issues. Next steps, we presented our results and the results of the other MAP assessments to our State Health Improvement Planning Advisory Coalition, and they came up with these 5 priorities. As you can see, the top 2 are more health status priorities, and the 3 others are health systems priorities that were identified through our state public health system assessment. Improving data capacity, health promotion capacity, and integrating public health, behavioral health, and primary care. That's the toughest one to work on, as you may imagine. But we had such good discussion during our assessment that these were things that people thought we really need to make changes here before we can make other things happen across our state. We also use the results in our strategic planning. We have a couple of priorities that are systems related, data, again, and health promotion. What are we at our division doing around those areas? We haven't quite gotten to the quality improvement planning piece yet, but we will be using these results in that piece. A lot of the weaknesses can be incorporated into a quality improvement plan, or might need a quality improvement project or quick process. And finally, we're using the results in accreditation preparation. Of course, the prerequisites require the state health assessment, so this was part of our assessment. But also, if you crosswalk the results with the FAB self-assessment results, it adds a lot of depth to the findings, and it helps identify some potential solutions in that FAB self-assessment, potential solutions to the gaps that you might find. So that crosswalk has been really interesting. Tips: give yourself time to plan up front. You have to be well organized. In our case, we did this in 1 day, so we had 1 shot at it to get people there, to get good information, and to not turn them off to any of our future processes. Work hard to get the right people to participate. It's important, if you want people to answer the questions, you got to get the right people there. Find good facilitators, choose recorders who get the content, and train facilitators and recorders together. Have a clear idea of how the information will be used and share that with the participants. Help show the value of what you're doing. And I think this is just one assessment that needs to be combined with others to get the whole picture. But again, if you want to really get at the public health system, strengths, weaknesses, etc., this is a great assessment to do that. Version 3, we thought, allows for capturing strengths, weaknesses, and opportunities better, and people really had a good time talking about the system perspective. And finally, people sometimes have difficulty distinguishing between the state health agency or the local health agency and the system. So just remind people of that throughout the assessment process. This is about the system, not about one agency. I will be happy to answer any questions at the end of this session. Thank you, and I'm going to turn it over to Lana. Are you next?
Good morning. I appreciate having the opportunity to come and talk about what we did in Oklahoma. I'm going to be kind of like Colleen and show you what Oklahoma looks like and where I'm located. I'm the yellow in Woods County, which is where we completed this assessment at. I kind of tried to highlight it a little bit. And my position is kind of unique. I am the Turning Point Field Consultant, and I cover those counties, and the counties with the stars have active coalitions in them. And that is my job. I work with the local coalitions and just addressing health issues at the grassroots level and using local resources. And when I first started with the health department, which has been about 11 years ago now, Harper County, which is actually my home county, which is next to Woods, it did not have a health department. And so we actually used that philosophy of using local resources and pulling people together. And we actually established a health department in Harper County in 2001. So that was kind of a neat thing to be a part of. Woods County, demographic-wise, we're very rural. We're frontier, actually, if you know it. That's apparently frontier's more rural than rural. We don't have a lot of people. Woods County's total population is around 9,000. We are primarily agriculture and also oil and gas. And they do have Northwestern Oklahoma State University, which has just been granted NCAA Division II status, which was a big deal for them. But as looking at the health indicators, they are one of the healthiest counties in Oklahoma and wealthiest. I wanted to put a picture of a sunset because we don't have a lot of people, but we don't have a lot of trees. But we have beautiful sunsets, and you can see them because we don't have a lot of trees. The motivation to participate in this assessment, statewide, Oklahoma, we always kind of been ranking towards the bottom in health outcomes. And we know that we need to change. We know we need to do better, and we're actively working on that. And we are thankful. There's always a couple of southern states that we are thankful for that keeps us off the bottom. So we are very appreciative of that. So last year we did a social marketing campaign with TSET, which is a Tobacco Settlement Endowment Trust that Oklahoma created a few years ago when the Master Settlement came out. And we posted that number everywhere, and what that number is the number of people that die in Oklahoma every year prematurely to preventable causes of death. And so we did that, and then Oklahoma is in the beginning stages of accreditation, and we've completed initial pilot projects at the state health department and then also in a local county health department. And then the way Oklahoma is a centralized state, there are 77 counties in Oklahoma, 70 county health departments. So there's only seven counties now without health departments. And the way it's structured is we have administrative directors that cover 4 to 5 counties. For example, on the map, the yellow part that I cover, that is an administrative district. And they are currently hiring accreditation coordinators per district. So those accreditation coordinators and are going to really be facilitating that accreditation process. And to get My position is really working on MAP, which is the Mobilizing for Action Through Planning and Partnerships, at the local level. And so the accreditation officers and I are going to be working hand in hand to get the community health improvement plan and then move on into the accreditation process. As we prepared for the assessment, I personally did not have any background as far as the local public health system assessment. I was just starting the MAP to work with the MAP process in the counties I cover. And I wasn't sure if participating in the field test was going to be a good idea or not, but it was, because the CDC provided really good technical assistance. They have a lot of great information that kind of walks you through this step by step. And they did provide the check sheets and the, like, who to invite, and then the NHO website is a wealth of information. That's where I look for the invitation letters and the voting cards and all that. That's the website that I use, and they have a lot of great examples on their website. And then locally, since I'm not from Woods County, I used the coalition and our MAP core group to really decide how we wanted to structure it. Where they, in Nebraska, they did the one-day retreat. My people weren't buying the retreat. They didn't know that it was like a retreat. So the way we structured it was a little differently than that, and I'll get to that in a minute. But one kind of neat part, because we don't have a lot of resources, the core group really was, we had two lunches donated by a local hospital and our Chamber of Commerce. And then basically our core group, and luckily it was during the cold months, and so we could do, you know, soups and stuff, but basically myself and two or three other people off that core committee just helped provide the lunches so we could do that. Here's a list of the information of who was invited, which is basically everyone. And one reason that I felt like the assessment was so good is because it was so inclusive, and it really helped look at the health system as a whole. And the way we structured it was a 5-week process. We did it once a week, and we did it for 2 hours. And basically, we did two essential services per time. And we did it at a tech center, and they allowed us to use their facility for free and provided the tea and the water and all that kind of stuff. And we set it up in the U-shape. I was going to say horseshoe, but I thought maybe that would sound too Oklahoma. I don't know. But it was a U or a horseshoe, whatever you want to call it. And it really did help with the discussion, facilitating the discussion, making everybody feel a part of it. And then we also provided a binder to each participant that had the assessment in there. We do a state of the county's health report, and I put that specific county's health report in there. And then the health system chart, which I call it the jelly bean chart, but I don't know where, if you guys are familiar, but it shows the linkages of the local public health system, and it's my favorite. I love it. I think it shows everyone how they play a part in that. And then we provided the voting cards as well. We wrote on the flip cards, and then we posted them on the wall, the ground rules for the assessment, as well as the 10 essential health services, and then kind of the assessment process, how it was going to work throughout the day. You do have a recorder, and I will just briefly say that you do need to make sure that your recorder understands what they need to be recording, and it's really helpful for the qualitative part to get it, because if not, you have a lot of numbers, and you know you'll see the numbers what you are strong in and what you are weak in, but you may not remember why. So it's important that you get that written down. This is an example of kind of when we got into the process, I acted as a facilitator, and I would read the essential health service, and then the model, then there was a model, usually about three, I believe, or so model standards per health service, essential service. And so this was the first one, and I would read through this, and the last three bullets are what people need to think about when we decide how good of this as a system we're doing. For this one was, do you conduct community health assessments? And if you do, do you provide the community with those reports and make it available and actually create the actually do the reports and then get them out into the community? And so then after we would go through that, then you get to the discussion questions. And this was kind of the part that Colleen was talking about, that people can really, they really get caught up in that. You have to be careful because those are discussion questions to get people to thinking about it. But they can get hung up on that. And so it's important to try to have facilitate that and keep that moving along. After you feel like it's been discussed in depth, then you can move over to the question part, which is there on the right. And that's when you do the voting. And it's good because it since you have all your different components of your local health system there, they can see how they play a part. And even though your certain agency may not be strong in that, a different one is. And when you vote, you're voting on the system as a whole, not on your specific agency, which was something we kept having to reiterate because they would get a little confused on that sometimes. And then after you go through each model standard for that specific essential service, then there was the summary. And this part is new to the version 3. And I really liked it. It was very, very useful. And looking back now, as we are using these results to do our community or our county health improvement plan, it's important that you take the time because it is at the end and you feel like you've talked about it and talked about it and talked about it, but it is a great opportunity to get that written down. And then this is an example of what this one of the summaries look like. And the opportunities for immediate improvement are great because it's stuff that you can take and work on right then, whether it's as the system as a whole or through a specific agency. We had an average of 20 people participate in our assessment, and that's pretty good for us and for the size of the population that we were drawing from. And it really did enable them to see themselves as part of a system and to kind of break down the silos that we all get to working in. And then the CDC did formulate the report for us, and it was very professionally done, and then we were able to get those results out to everyone that participated. And kind of an unexpected positive was this was the first assessment we did in the MAPS process, and so it really helped to get the buy-in into the MAP process and what we were doing. And it actually increased the engagement in our coalition. We had people that started coming, and so that was a great unexpected outcome of that. Here's the example of the essential services scores for our assessment. And our lowest was evaluation, and that was not overly surprising actually to me, because we don't take the time to do that well. And I think doing this assessment and seeing that has really helped to us to refocus, especially health department wise, to be sure and take the time to do the assessment part. Then the next one is the Essential Service 3, Educate and Empower. And being from the health department, you know, I felt like that we did that well. But when you're looking at it from the systems perspective and you're the only partner that is doing that, then it, you know, your numbers go down significantly. And I don't know if what you guys feel like in your areas, but we, as a health department, we just don't market well. That 5320 campaign we did is about the first social marketing type of thing that we've ever done. And so I feel like that was very useful to us to know that we really, because a lot of our partners at the table weren't even, when we went around through for the discussion, they didn't know what we did. They didn't know that we'd been a part of that. And so sometimes it helps you realize that what you think you're doing really well, you're not doing really well. So that was learning on that. And then also the monitor health status, the essential service one. We hadn't done a lot of community assessments. And so getting started in the MAP process really provides a lot of good data to plug into your, as you develop your plan. Our next steps is, you know, Oklahoma has taken on the accreditation process and is hiring the new staff for the coordinators, moving that direction. And the completion of this instrument is not only instrumental for the local health departments preparing for that, but also preparing for accreditation while conducting MAP can strengthen a community's MAP process as well. So it's a win-win, and the coordinators, the accreditation coordinators, and the training point consultants that have the position that I have are going to have to work hand-in-hand and hopefully do as good a job as we can of streamlining that whole process and making it work so we don't have to go back and redo stuff, that we can work together and get everything we need the first time. Specifically for Woods County, in fact, today, right now, when I'm here, they're there, and they are meeting, our monthly coalition meeting is today, and they are on the strategic issues. We're picking from the 10 that we've picked through. We've completed all our MAP assessments now. We have 10 strategic issues that we're looking at. We're going to pick the top three or four to develop our goals and action plan from. And I believe that Woods County will be the first county in my area that will complete or start the accreditation process. So that's kind of exciting. Top user tips. Utilize the resources that are already out there. The NATRA website that I mentioned before is extremely helpful, and there's no sense in taking the time and the effort to go back and start all over and follow directions, because it is a very structured process, and they will tell you, it tells you exactly how they want you to do it. So follow directions. And there is a huge learning curve for participants, and maybe in the more urban areas, and I don't know if the state level was the same, but I know this version 3, it is simpler and supposedly easier to understand, and I did not participate with the version 2, so I'm not familiar, but there is still a huge learning curve, and they talked a lot about the terminology, and they do provide a glossary, and that's important to give to your participants. And I don't think we need to overwhelm them before they start, but I think it's good to definitely give them information on kind of the process and maybe some of that important stuff that you think they need to know before they come in. Because that was when we did the evaluations, when we evaluated at the end of the assessment, that's what they said a lot, was the terminology, and just that once they kind of caught on to what they were doing in that terminology, then they enjoyed the process a lot more. And I put serve food, because if you do it anytime around lunch or if you do the one day thing, providing food, it just helps. I know maybe it's just in Oklahoma we like to eat, I don't know, but it does actually seem to help with participation. And then use the results. I know a lot of times we participate in different efforts, and it's only as good as what we use it for. And so, fortunately, since we are in the middle of the MAPS process, and we are going to use those results when we're using them. So I just wanted to encourage everybody to use the results that they get back. That is the end of my presentation. I'll turn it over to Jim.
Well, I think Kentucky, who doesn't have a frontier area, that we must be one of the major metropolitan areas now. So. Well, I appreciate the opportunity to be here today to be part of this panel, and I'm specifically talking about the facilitator role. And just as background, in Kentucky, I was facilitating a modified MAP process. And it was modified in the sense that our state commissioner, who has since retired, assembled a select group of about 15, well, there were about 20, but 15 who actually participated in the performance standards role, in looking down the road as to where Kentucky needed to be in 10 years. And so when we got to looking at the local public health system assessment, we were provided the opportunity to participate in the pilot of version 3, and we were excited to do that. Now, this morning, I'm talking only about that very narrow role that the facilitator plays in facilitating the process. But you should know that there's an expanded role the facilitator can play. We heard about the time that's involved in inviting participants. So the facilitator may be involved in finding a venue, in actually inviting the participants, and then following up. But this morning, we're only going to talk about that narrow role. These are the four major areas that the facilitator plays in the assessment process. There's important prep work that's done before the event. There's an orientation that's conducted, and it needs to be conducted in one large group, whether or not the process is going to be done in small groups or large groups. The assessment process itself, and we're going to talk about that in a little bit more detail later, but basically, as you've heard previously, there's some discussion, there's some consensus building and voting, and then some identification of the strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and priorities. And then an important role in summarizing what has gone on at the end of the day or at the end of each day, if it's done on more than one day. We heard about the ground rules for the meeting. These should be discussed during orientation and posted, but there's a more important role, a more important set of ground rules for the facilitator, and those are shown on the right. And it's basically to keep the process moving along. Time is always a concern. And the other big issue is that some people have important things to say, but yet others may be dominating the conversation. So it's very important for the facilitator to make sure that every voice is heard. The 10 essential public health services and the concept of the public health system are difficult concepts for those who don't have a public health background. And for those individuals who only know the health department from getting a flu shot there or reading about a restaurant inspection, the prep work that's done ahead of time is vital to identify how every invited participant fits into the system and how they or their organization plays in the 10 essential public health services. They need to feel included, and during the orientation, it's an important part of the facilitator's role to make them understand how they fit into the system. One of the most unique facilitator roles is trying to help the group reach consensus while remaining neutral. Well, there's Tony Bennett. Oh, shoot, I thought all of you were going to turn around. It's so easy for the facilitator to persuade in that sense. And it's absolutely vital that the facilitator remain neutral in that sense. Occasionally, there's group conflict. Now, Schwarz's book, The Skill Facilitator, provides a model, a structure of how you can work with that conflict in keeping good conversation going. And Lynn Ciotti wrote a book called Death by Meeting, and the assessment process is done in a meeting. He talks about identifying and nurturing that natural level of conflict. So we need that robust discussion among participants. Now, in my particular case, where I was working with state and local, there's this natural conflict about, you know, how resources are going to be allocated and so forth. That robust discussion that comes from that conflict, from that tension, is absolutely vital in identifying the weaknesses in the system. And that's one of the most vital parts of what we're trying to do, is to improve the system, and we improve it by finding those weaknesses, those areas where improvements can be made. So during the orientation, it's important to explain how we're looking at the system, not a particular agency, and we're going to evaluate how they perform in each of the 10 essential public health services and by the model standards. Now, if you're not familiar with the model standards, there are four. They're shown across the top. Basically, we're looking at how well does the system plan for and implement that particular essential service. We're looking at the collaboration between state and local health departments. We're looking at how well the system collects data that can be used to improve the performance and improve the quality. And then we're looking at how we develop capacity and resources. So those are the four model standards. Now, in my particular case, working with only that select group, we were evaluating only how our state agency and our local health departments were performing. So we didn't have participants there who were from other outside agencies. Now, let me go back, remind you that the charge that had been given to me by our state commissioner was to evaluate what Kentucky's Department for Public Health needed to do to support local health departments in 2020. So that was, in essence, what we were looking at there. During the orientation, we also explain about how we use STEM questions to make sure that each of the model standards are covered in a comprehensive manner. So there's a handful of STEM questions that are used to evaluate each model standard within each essential service. These are the voting categories, and I can tell you that we had difficulty, and during the entire day we were doing this, we had to constantly remind folks that performing at the optimal level could be as low as 75%, and some of the folks that we had in our group just did not agree with that. They felt like that the optimal level really ought to be like 90 and above. Talked about voting and the signs going up. Voting can be done low-tech or high-tech. And we were fortunate in Kentucky at the State Department that we were able to borrow from Three Rivers District Health Department. And we have April here representing them today, so let me give credit to them. We were able to borrow some high-tech voting that we used. The problem that you might have with the low tech is that if you're doing the performance standard assessment in one large group and you're taking a vote, it may be difficult to count those, and when you count those, that may take time away from the important discussion. So if you have a small group, if you're doing it with multiple small groups, then the low tech voting works very well. Malcolm Gladwell, who wrote The Tipping Point, which I'm sure some of you have read, but he also wrote What the Dog Saw, and in it he discusses, and he was on a recent NPR program, where he discussed the important work that Howard Moskowitz did in trying to determine the perfect composition of Diet Pepsi. Now, that was years ago. And he assembled a focus group that looked at the hundreds of possible combinations of artificial sweetener, thinking that they were going to find one perfect product that they would call Diet Pepsi. And what he essentially learned, which was kind of landmark in the marketing effort, is that there's not always one particular perfect product. The point for us is that the participants' reality about the public health system is that there will be as many realities about it as there are participants. So when we have someone that votes low on a particular aspect of performance, that doesn't mean that they don't get it or they just don't understand. That is their reality, and we need to understand that. The facilitator needs to understand that. This is a graph showing the high-tech way of voting. And if you see here, what would you think the consensus would be? Significant, right? But that's not all that's needed here. We need to find out why 25%, one-fourth, voted it to be at the moderate level, and why one-third voted it to be at the optimal level. That kind of discussion is very important in bringing out the strengths that need to be leveraged and the weaknesses that need to be improved. I hope that makes sense. So there were 144 pages in the pilot assessment, and we were told to find creative ways of presenting that material. And we in Kentucky used a PowerPoint. So we would talk about each essential public health service and then describe it in lay terms to make sure that there was good understanding. And then there are particular points. So again, we're having some discussion here on each of these points. You'll hear this over and over again. Discussion is important, and the more discussion, the better the assessment will be. Then the model standard. So then we're talking specifically here about how well we plan and implement on essential public health service number one. More discussion. Here are some of the data elements. More discussion here. And then we get to the meat or to the essence of the assessment, where we have a question and we're going to vote for that. But before voting, we have additional points that we want to discuss. So how many times did we have discussion? We had discussion on 4 or 5 slides there. Okay, again, another vote. Obviously, the consensus is at the moderate level. But again, it's important to find out, okay, who voted for it as minimal level, who would be willing to share why you voted the way that you did. It's that discussion again that's going to bring out those weaknesses. I love weaknesses. I think strengths are good, but the weaknesses are really at the meat of...
Do you have a weakness for them?
So then, again, we would go through the same process for the other two STEM questions for the first model standard. And this will be the last vote that we'll look at. Now, I know that there's some of you that would be wondering, okay, why did 16% of the participants vote that to be significant and optimal? Okay, those are the strengths. But more important for the facilitator is finding out why clearly half of the group voted it to be minimal. Now, we opted in Kentucky to do 2 additional assessments. There's an optional assessment and a supplemental assessment where we're looking at the priority. What priority do we place in Kentucky on a particular area, and what's the contribution toward the accomplishment of that essential service that's completed by the state health department? And those overall will give you a better report in the end. You'll get better understanding. Now, we kind of did the same thing, I think, that Colleen did, in that we had a written sheet that we put by each participant, and I had them that to record whenever they heard something they thought was a strength or was a weakness, to write that down. And so an example here is someone wrote down, the environmental health collects a lot of data but does not analyze it. This is a perfect quality improvement topic that might provide some data to the environmentalist in the field that would make his or her job easier. Okay? Okay, so the facilitator is multitasking. There's the assessment process, number one, and then the two additional questions. The effort to obtain consensus is the fourth activity. And then I put SWOTs, but it's really SWOT, strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and priorities. But collecting all of that data is the fifth. And setting and keeping pace with the time, like I'm looking now and finding out that how much time I've got left, is vitally important to keep the activity on task. Missed opportunities. If you're going to do this, you need to understand that participants get started well, but as the day wears on, so do the participants. And toward the end of the day, if you're doing it in an all-day event, they're mostly interested in, okay, let's do the vote and move on to the next vote. The other thing I learned was those sheets that I just showed you with the SWOT analysis were not used very well. We should have had a discussion at the end of every model standard, or at least at the end of every essential service, to discuss those, to draw those out. People didn't keep good notes in that area. I have learned that lesson very well. It was suggested that we put hobby sticks at each participant's area, and I thought that was kind of a silly thing, but I did it. And I discovered that it was a fabulous idea because it kept the participants' hands busy during the day. And they were really very creative with the things that they displayed. But it kept their minds on the task, and I think it reduced tension. So that's an excellent idea, those hobby sticks. Okay, my recommendations. The qualities of an ideal facilitator is someone that can remain neutral, someone who's familiar with the National Public Health Performance Standards Program, and especially the 10 essential public health services and the public health system. They need to be experienced with facilitation in order to set the pace to ensure that everyone understands what is said, to be able to deal with that conflict that may come on. And if you're looking for a facilitator, look to your neighboring health department. You may have someone there who will come in that can remain neutral but be familiar with that. And you may also go to the faculty of a public health program at one of the local schools. And then finally, ministers are often trained in facilitation. They'll need some learning with the public health system. Concluding points. Regardless of how your session is conducted, whether it's one large group or multiple groups or one day or multiple days, it must be done in a way that you reach consensus on the performance, but more importantly, identifies those strengths and weaknesses. Number two, the National Public Health Performance Standards Program is the most important assessment that you can do, whether it's part of MAP or standalone. Now, be honest. You probably have a pretty good idea of the health status in your area. You know the issues that are if you looked at your morbidity and mortality data, you'd probably have a pretty good idea of what's there. You probably have a good idea of the forces of change, the Health Care Act, the reduced funding. You probably have a good idea of the resources that are available in your community, but the Performance Standards Program will help you identify those weaknesses, and the whole essence of this is quality improvement. We want to find that so we can improve the system. Participants will be better participants if they see themselves as part of the system, so orient them well. And CDC and its partners have a wealth of resources. Use those. Version one, and we piloted that at my health department years ago, had in the first section had 18 different votes. 18 different votes just on the data collection. In version 2, those 18 were reduced to 5. In version 3, without sacrificing anything and with facilitating more discussion, 1 vote. In my view, the evolution from version 1 to version 2 to version 3 is a perfect example of CDC and its partners applying the PDSA to continual quality improvement. Thank you.
So again, I'd like to thank our speakers, Lana, Colleen, and Jim. You did a fantastic job in explaining your field testing experience for the version 3 of the performance standards and the importance of having an experienced and educated facilitator to do that process. At this time, I want to invite all of you to the front. I'm not sure if you want to sit here or if we could set up 3 chairs, but we want to give them the opportunity to answer your questions. Perhaps we have people here who are considering doing a assessment in their state or local or governance system. We're going to give you the opportunity to ask them questions, perhaps about their experience or version 3 or anything specific to your health agency. So we'll just start right here in the front.
Just to start off, do you by chance know what we believe?
And we are very fortunate to have some people from the CDC here today. Liza Corso from CDC. Thank you. Right in the purple? Right purple? Yes.
I think all of you mentioned that, maybe two of you mentioned that people who were brought together, some of them don't see themselves as part of the health system. And I guess I'm wondering after that process, whether when you looked at the areas for improvement, if they felt they had any role to play in that improvement, or if they felt on the health department or the agency to improve.
I think we found that by the end of the process, people saw their place, especially when we got down into the details and the discussion. So I don't think anybody walked away saying, I don't know what my place is here, and they saw their role and improved them.
I agree. Yeah.
When we piloted version 1, and this was years ago, I took the, what did you call it?
The jelly bean
chart, and I specifically put, like we had a federally qualified health clinic, I took that out and put the name of the health clinic, White House Clinics, and Kentucky provides care in 4 areas. So I tried to gear it on that chart, and we had those in all of the breakout rooms there, to really try to focus on the role that they play in the system.
So, I'm thinking about the composition of the participants, and my first inclination would be we should get all the executive directors. And then my second inclination says, maybe mid-level folks could be better because they understand what they do and what other people do. So, as opposed to the higher level folks who really are only 1,000 feet. So, maybe validation of those two theories, the best qualification.
when you invite the top level people, the ones that, like a hospital CO in a local community, if he or she are tied up, they'll identify someone that's important who will come back to them. But of course, they're the decision makers, and you would love to have them there. But sometimes, as you say, the mid-level folks really have a better understanding of how things really kind of work.
When we did it, we sent out letters and we sent them to the directors and the CEOs, but then what we said was, if you cannot attend, will you please delegate someone to be a part of this process?
And we like them that we also have that note to people if they commit them, please send someone else. But I think a mix is important, and I think trust your gut. You know the people in your state or your local area, and it's important to think about who can contribute the most. And who are the people that like these sorts of things? My supervisor kept saying, I don't think that person would really like this. Let's invite this person instead. And I think that was a good point. Who likes to have these conversations?
And then, I'm really intrigued with the 5-session as opposed to a marathon.
In the pilot we did, in the pilot for version 1, we had a morning group and an afternoon group. Each group did 2 essential services. I've seen, if you look at the user guide and the facilitator guide, you'll find various ways of kind of linking them together. Now, if you look at FAB standards 1, 4, 5, and 7, all of those require community input. So I would suggest that if you're looking at doing this, that you find at least one way that you could get that group with people who are from parks and recreation and from the hospitals to make you do those together. 1, 4, the 5 where they're doing a shift or a trip, and then 7.
And just doing it the way we did it with the 5 different sessions, a couple of things to consider is, for the most part, we had the same participants every time, but there was a couple of changes each week.
Thank you. You have a question?
Brad knew in my position as the accreditation coordinator for 2 counties. And so I'm from Oregon, and so we have the transformation bill, and we're developing a coordinated care organization. So we're doing a lot of the community work right now, and we have a lot of relationships there. But the thing I'm struggling with is not knowing how the county works, because I'm on day 22 of employment. Trying to facilitate the conversations in the most efficacious way with the higher up so I can identify the resources internally for pulling out the components. So I was wondering it seems like this process might be really good internally as well for identifying the resources across the agency. What are your thoughts on that?
I think it's an interesting idea that has a lot of potential. I think you could maybe do a scan, an overview scan with internal folks first. And you could also, while you're talking about resources, you can talk about potential participants for the community-wide version. So you could use it in a couple of ways, maybe.
If you're on day 22, I would not think that by day 32 you're going to be conducting any of the MAP assessments or the public health performance standards program. I would spend some time identifying from the jelly bean chart who in your community fits in each of those, and I try to make a point of trying to go visit those, the school superintendent, for schools or the local fire department and how the fire department's involved in some community education. Try to find those mutual areas where you have mutual interests, and then maybe have a little bit of if you're able to do that, some dialogue with those folks to find out what resources they're applying to those mutual interests that you may have, if that makes sense.
I would offer a note of caution. For version two, lots of our local health departments did it according to the instructions. There were a few that tried to do it just with internal staff, complete the entire assessment with just the staff. And I attended a couple of those sessions, and the staff were whispering to me during the break that we need other people here to answer these questions, don't we? And I said, yes, you do. But you know, it's hard to balance that technical control. But you have to have, if you're completing the assessment, you have to have participation from across the system.
Really, the MAC process, when it evolved, or when it came out, the most positive thing about that is that it kind of forces you to bring people together into the community. That's the biggest benefit from that. And as we've seen our resources in public health dwindle, we've got to leverage those other resources as much as possible. So you really do need to get a broad array of folks at your assessments.
Let me take a question here.
So my question is a little bit less on assessment, maybe a little bit more towards the side of implementation. So I'm from Michigan, from Washtenaw County, which is the home of the University of Michigan. So the county's pretty interesting. We have with some of the big tertiary health system, and then in the eastern part of the county, and then in the western part of the county, it is much more rural. And I know that when you mentioned Kentucky, I guess it's kind of like LA, but well, you mentioned the frontier area. You know, it sounds like your state and the area that you work in have some of those same challenges. You've got areas with lots of resources and areas with far fewer. So based on the result of assessments like this, how do you move forward to try and leverage resources in these rural areas or these frontier areas to boost?
I think that's the beauty of this DISM assessment. You're thinking about ways to improve the entire system. So while those things came up, I remember I was facilitating the health status, Essential Service 1, and one of the local health directors, one of the smallest regions that we have with the fewest resources, said, but we don't have staff to analyze these data, and we don't have the resources to do this or that. And we took note of that in our reporters, wrote all of that down. And then we asked the question, what can we do as a system to help this health department improve their skills, analyze those data, what needs to happen? And so one of the solutions or opportunities that came up was a need for better data analysis from the state level to provide those data to the locals, which is a role that we have in the State Division. So I think that's part of the beauty of this system level assessment, is that you're not just looking at individual pieces, you're looking at how those pieces contribute to the whole, and how can that whole benefit the pieces.
And at our beginning, we were, a lot of the partners that participated, if you'd have asked at the beginning, they may not have even listed themselves as a systems partner. And so, you know, at our local level, because it was so rural, it really was just that beginning level, just that awareness that they are a part of that. And like, I don't know if you guys have the health coalitions and stuff that I was talking about, but when we did have them start coming and participating and seeing how that we can all partner together, we may not have a lot of resources per se, but when we all come together, we can do some really great things.
So I'm from Nevada, more familiar with the local side, now the state, but
the entire system on the state level, we would have looked at our state universities and have four different schools or colleges of public health getting representatives from there. We have a state hospital association who's been talking about local health departments helping nonprofit hospitals on the local level to do their community health needs assessment, which is a requirement under the Affordable Care Act. We would have looked at all of the specific professional organizations like the Board of Kentucky Nurses. We would have looked at the American Cancer Society, Kentucky affiliate. So we would have looked to try to get a wide array of people for a true statewide system. And you had that listed, I think, on your slide.
Yeah, I found the best way to get the right people there was to look through the actual assessment tool and figure out who had the answers to these questions. And for the most part, we had people who could answer the questions. We didn't have big gaps. It's important to know who in your state can answer those questions, though. So if you don't know, find somebody at your state health department who can help answer that question. Who knows the answers to these questions? I can send you the list of people who invited if you'd like. And then the question about the state and local, we had everybody there in one room talking about, well, in multiple rooms, talking about the answers to these questions. And when you frame it as a system, I didn't find that there were a lot of tensions or finger pointing about you don't provide these things to me. It's really more of a matter of fact sort of discussion. And I think your facilitators really help if they're well trained. They can really help make the discussion move forward instead of getting to finger pointing.
A point I wanted to mention earlier, these invitations that go out, don't send an invitation out saying we're going to do this on this day and we'd love to do it. If you can. When you send it to, like, your parks and recreation folks, identify that physical activity is a key component in the health of and the health status of your local citizens, and that you would want them to be at the table so they can represent those needs. So try to tailor your invitation, either when you do it on the phone or in a written invitation. Even if you had a standard pre-printed invitation, just writing something at the bottom so that people see that they have a vested interest in being present there, I think it would help getting to get the right people there.
And I would add, if you know their intentions, you might put that out there up front and say, I know that sometimes we disagree about where we're at in our health system. Let's make this a productive conversation and get past those intentions.
We're coming up on, well, we are at 12 o'clock, so we want to be respectful of everyone's time and other people who are presenting here at APCO. Oh, excuse me, here at APAJ. My mind's focused on APCO. very quickly, I want to, again, thank Colleen and Jim and Lana for presenting today. There was a lot of meetings, a lot of calls, and a lot of emails that went into this effort, so we thank you for your time.